Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading of the 8th chapter of the 7th canto, entitled Lord Nrsingadev Slays the King of the Demons. Texts 14, I'll be going through 16, because 15 and 16 are very closely related and there's no purport for 14. Is text 15 on the board, starting with Tadaiva? Okay. So I'll start with 14 and then we'll chant 15. Evang duruktar muhur ardayanrusha sutam maha bhagavatam maha ruraha kadgang pragrihyot patito varasanat stambang tadati balak swamushtina. Being obsessed with anger, Hiranyakashipu, who was very great in bodily strength, thus chastised his exalted devotee son Prahlad with harsh words. Cursing him again and again, Hiranyakashipu took up his sword, got out from his royal throne, and with great anger struck his fist against the column. Text 15. Tadaiva tasmin nindo tibishano. Babu vayenanda tataham asputat. Yang vai swadishnyo pagat. Tang twajadayak. Shrutva swadamatyayam angame nire. Tadaiva tasmin ninado tibishano. Babu vayenanda tataham asputat. Yang vai swadishnyo pagatang twajadayak. Shutva swadamatyayam angame nire. Tadaiva tasmin ninado tibishano. Babu vayenanda kataham asputat. Yang vai swavishnyo pagatang twajadayak. Shrutva swadamatyayam angame nire. Bhattis, please. Tada, at that time, Eva, just Tasmin, within the pillar, Nidadaha, a sound, Ati Bishanaha, very fearful, Babhuva, there was, Yena, by which, Andakataham, the covering of the universe, Asputat, appeared to crack, Yam, which, Vai, indeed, Swadishnya Upagatam, reaching their respective abodes, to, but, Aja-adayaha, the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Shrutva, hearing, Swadhamma-atyayam, the destruction of their abodes, Anga, my dear Yudhishthir, Menire, thought. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Gijai. Then from within the pillar came a fearful sound, which appeared to crack the covering of the universe. O my dear Yudhishthir, this sound reached even the abodes of the demigods like Lord Brahma. And when the demigods heard it, they thought, oh, now our planets are being destroyed. Purport. As we sometimes become very much afraid at the sound of a thunderbolt, perhaps thinking that our houses will be destroyed, the great demigods like Lord Brahma feared the thundering sound that came from the pillar in front of Hiranyakashipu. So I'll continue to the next verse also, since it's so closely related with the present verse. Savikramam putra vade psor ojasa nishamya niradam apurvam adbutam antak sabayamna dadarshatat padam vitatra suryena surariyut paha. While showing his extraordinary prowess, Hiranyakashipu, who desired to kill his own son, heard that wonderful tumultuous sound which had never before been heard. Upon hearing the sound, the other leaders of the demons were afraid. None of them could find the origin of that sound in the assembly. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.8, Krishna explains himself by saying, Rasoham apsukanteya prapasmi shashi Surayoho, pranavak sarva vedeshu, shabda ke paurusham nushu. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound and ether and the ability in man. Here the Lord exhibited his presence everywhere by the tumultuous sound in the sky, shabda ke. The tumultuous thundering sound was proof of the Lord's presence. the demons like Hiranyakashipu could now realize the supreme ruling power of the Lord, and thus Hiranyakashipu became afraid. However powerful a man may be, he always fears the sound of a thunderbolt. Similarly, Hiranyakashipu and all the demons who were his associates were extremely afraid because of the presence of the Supreme Lord in the form of sound, although they could not trace out the source of the sound. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umili Dange Natasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namang Vishnupadai Krishna Sabudali Shimate Paladananda Salintamane Namang Vishnupadai Krishna Sabudali Shimate Bhakti Dharanda Salintamane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vitarane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paschatya Dejitarne. So it's interesting that the verses of today focus upon anger and fear produced from sound. This is important to understand because it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita that these things are very intimately connected. For instance, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 4th chapter, text 14, it's mentioned that one who inquires into self-realization and thus subdues his powerful anger, which awakens suddenly in the body as if falling from the sky, transcends the modes of material nature. So when the living entities are under the different modes of nature, they're predominated by different qualities. For instance, one predominantly in the mode of passion is said to be controlled by lust and greed. But when that lust and greed gets frustrated, it then descends into the lower modes of anger, which is the lower mode of ignorance, which is characterized by anger. That's why in the the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text 21. Krishna says, Trividam narakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmanaha kama krodas tata lobas tasmade tat trayam tyajet. There are three gates leading to this hell, lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So these are describing the different qualities of demonic personalities. Demonic personalities are characterized by these three attributes, lust, greed, and anger. They're consumed by lust, and their lust is never satisfied. They're always greedy for more opportunities to try to satisfy their lust. But this can never happen, so it always turns to anger. But at the same time, it's never possible to satisfy all these different material desires. It's mentioned in the purport from today's verses that even the great demigods were fearful of the tumultuous sound of this lightning bolt. Why? Because it reminds all the great demigods, it reminds the living entities of the supreme power of Krishna. The power to destroy, the power to create. It reminds them that they're not the supreme controller. Like Hiranyakashipu, he's thinking that he's the supreme controller. He's thinking that by his will everything's happening, that he's creating everything, he's manifesting his own reality, he's controlling everything. But he's not. And so when he hears this tumultuous sound of the thunderbolt, it shakes his world. And he and the other demigods become fearful because it reminds them. It reminds them that they're not in control. And that all these different things that they're striving after will eventually come to an end. It's mentioned in the Upanishads. Yadbishavata pavate. It's out of fear of the Supreme Lord that the wind is blowing. Taittiriya Upanishad 281. You know, so all the demigods, they are devotees, yes, but at the same time, they're not nishkama. They're sakama devotees. They're devotees with material desires, sakama. Nishkama is without desire. Those who are liberated beings, who are free from these lower qualities of lust, anger, and greed, these are the nishkama devotees. And that's what Krishna encourages all of us to become throughout the Bhagavad Gita. He encourages us to give up anger and fear. He says it over and over again throughout the Bhagavad Gita so that we can become free from all these delusions that arise from material hankerings. The demigods, they're not free from these material hankerings. That's why the demigods, they execute their duties out of fear. Because they still harbor different desires that they know are temporary, that they know can be destroyed. And they're fearful that that what things they've accumulated will be scattered to the wind. It's mentioned that even Lord Brahma is fearful. That he's fearful because he knows exactly when his body will expire. So by giving up all these different desires, then we can actually come to a stage of fearlessness and we can become peaceful. After all, as Bhakti Madhurya Govinda Swami quoted in one of his previous classes, I believe it was yesterday, he was talking about Bhagavad Gita, 11th chapter, text 32, where Krishna says, "Time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds. And I have come here to destroy all people." So that's a fearful thing. If we're caught up in these different desires of this material world, if we're caught up in this body, in this whole world that we've generated, surrounding this body, then it's a very fearful condition. It's fearful because all these bodies will be destroyed by Krishna in the form of time. But there's an escape from that also. There's relief. You know, which is interesting that in the purports from today, that it specifically mentioned about sound. Because not only can sound generate fear in the form of the tumultuous thundering sound cracking from the column that Hiranyakashipu hit with his fist, but it can also produce liberation through Shabda Brahman, transcendental sound. So, we really need to take advantage of the sound because, yes, we should be fearful. We should be fearful by these tumultuous sounds generated from the destruction of our material desires. And we should take it seriously. We shouldn't get so caught up in trying to build these supposed castles made out of sand. You know, these things that are temporary and that are bound to crumble and fall. Rather, we should take shelter of the transcendental sound through this transcendental literature, through Krishna's teachings, through the instruction of the previous acharyas. And let the sound have its proper action rather than becoming fearful. Because yes, this transcendental sound does destroy things. What does it destroy? It destroys our ignorance. It destroys our material attachment, our material lust, and anger and greed. It destroys the very foundation that demonic society is built upon. So let it be destroyed. Don't be attached to it. Just like that one example, I forget who it was off the top of my head, but the king who was saying that he didn't understand why he was being tormented by all these material desires. So his minister, if I remember correctly, I think it was Chanakya Pandit. So the king was asking the minister, how is it that I can get freed from these desires? And the minister illustrated the situation by grabbing a hold of the pillar and saying, leave me, leave me. And this is the situation of the king. Even though he was claiming to want to become freed from these material desires, still he was like the man clinging to the pillar, begging the pillar to leave him, even though he's holding on to the pillar. So in the same way, we all want the relief that comes from abandoning this materialistic concept of life that produces anger and frustration. But we're not willing to give up the very desires that generate the seeds of our own suffering. So when we open our ears and actually begin to practice Krishna consciousness, then it destroys these different seeds, these different desire seeds. So I'm sorry that it's a short class, but that basically covers everything. There wasn't much to go on. These are very short purports. So maybe we can open up the floor now to discussion. We have a question in the front here.
Yes, thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. And you were talking about hate and anger. And I was taking some notes and I wrote that love conquers all, including hate, including discrimination and all these things that are going on today in our society. And another thing I wrote was about Lord Brahm. You said that he was fearful. So I'm a little bit confused about why he's fearful if he's already in the spiritual world.
Well, he's fearful because he knows that his body is going to die. Death is the root of all fear. You know, from knowing when he's going to die, Lord Brahma becomes fearful.
Yeah, I agree that when dying, there's some fear there. But if we are fixed and certain that we're going to return back home to Godhead, then there should be no fear.
Yes, if you're perfectly Krishna conscious, then yes, there is no fear. But at the same time, you know, most people can't be so confident. You know, it's not like the Christians think where, you know, if you just proclaim, oh, you know, I believe, and then automatically you're going to go back to Godhead just because you profess your belief. You know, it actually requires a serious cleansing of the heart, which takes serious endeavor and practice. It's not something that can be taken cheaply or just for granted. That, you know, you just chalk up your little notch, you know, become like a card-carrying member, and then automatically you're given a free pass. There's many people from different religions in the world that think like that. When I used to go out and distribute books every day, I actually met many people, specifically from Christianity and Islam, that they actually preach like that. That's the cornerstone of their preaching. You know, they would preach that, you know, because I'd ask them, I'd say, you know, why do you practice what you follow? And they would say, well, I follow this. I'm a Muslim because of this, or I'm a Christian because of this, because I look at what the worst punishment is, at which religion has the worst punishment. And then I follow that religion so that I'll escape the worst punishment. So that, you know, in case I'm wrong, I won't suffer the worst fate. You know, but it's not so simple. It's not that you can just say, oh, you know, I believe, or I've bathed in the blood, or, you know, peace be upon him, that automatically you'll just be granted entrance into the spiritual world. When really you're just trying to escape some terrible fate. It's not so easy. It requires actual application and practice of the spiritual teachings, and then you can get freed from these different material conditions. You know, you'll be freed from anger. You'll be freed from fear, yes. Those are byproducts. But going back to a previous comment, it's not, you know, many people say, oh, love conquers all, but it's that's not so simple either. Because it's not that, you know, oh, I love you, and oh, you love me, and oh, let's all feel good about each other, and that'll conquer all these problems in the world. No, it's not so simple either. It's properly applied love, you know, by loving Krishna and investing our love within Krishna, then that will conquer all. But if you try to individually love everything else, that will not conquer all. That will still leave us trapped within this material world. Because we can't really love other living entities unless we've developed our love for Krishna. This issue was brought up a few days ago in the questions and answers. You know, to really nourish the whole tree, you have to nourish the root. You can't go to every individual branch and every individual leaf and try to water everything individually. That doesn't happen. Because the branches and the leaves, they're not capable of absorbing that water and transmitting it to the rest of the body. Only the roots are capable of absorbing the water. And if you want to get into the botany of it, you know, the water travels up the phloem through the roots, and it's transmitted to the rest of the body of the tree. Then the leaves, that water is turned into energy through photosynthesis that happens in the leaves. And the sugars from that photosynthesis traveled, you know, transmitted through the xylem, through the rest of the tree. So it's a whole cooperative nourishing process. You water the root, and then that fuels the whole cycle. So if we try to love, you know, each individual, oh, you know, I love humanity and I love you and we're all loving people, but if we cut Krishna out of the equation, it's useless. because that water won't actually nourish the tree. It'll just sit upon the waxy layer covering the leaves and the branches, and it won't actually penetrate. The rest of society won't feel its benefit. So really we have to learn about and develop our relationship with Krishna, Sambandha. And then through the development of that relationship with Krishna, through loving Krishna, then all of a sudden that love can be transmitted to all other living entities. Because Krishna becomes satisfied. When Krishna is satisfied, all living entities are satisfied. Savas Prabhu.
In previous verses, it's stated that Prahlad Maharaj, he actually saw Krishna, or Lord Nrsimhadev, in the pillar. And it doesn't say that anybody else did, but at least he saw him. And so he wasn't surprised. And it also shows that the difference between even the great soul like Brahma and Prahlad Maharaj. So it's signifying that Prahlad Maharaj could actually see Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't, and although it was a very ferocious form, he wasn't afraid. So it shows you the position of Prahlad Maharaj. What an amazing pure devotee of the Lord that he was. And it shows that Lord Brahma, even though a great personality materially, in the material world, he wasn't powerful enough to even be fearless of this particular form of the Lord or the sound that came from the Lord. He wasn't capable of understanding it. It bewildered him, just as it did all the other demons. So what this is also showing is the potency and the power of a real pure devotee of the Lord, a Mahabhagavata, one who is completely seeing Krishna everywhere, at every moment, not just thinking, but actually seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then not even being fazed by the ferocious form. After this particular incident, we'll be reading how no one could approach Lord Nrsimhadev. No one wanted to. No one could.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just too tumultuous and ferocious looking incarnation of Krishna. But only Prahlad Maharaj could walk up to him and actually say prayers to him, which were really beautiful. We'll read these beautiful prayers. But not only that, but he could even make a request to Lord Nrsimhadev.
Yeah.
You know, he could say, well, you know, don't worry about me. You know, please deliver my father. So here we see that Prahlad Maharaj, the story is really trying to exemplify how of a great personality is and how the Supreme Lord protects that kind of devotee in all circumstances.
And that's a, thank you, that's a very nice and extremely important point. Actually, this point is actually brought up many times throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, illustrating the difference between pure devotees, Mahabhagavats, like you mentioned, and other living entities like the demigods. So many times throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear about these different experiences that these great demigods go through, and we see their different plights and their material misunderstandings because they're still tinged with material desires. And then how these, how exalted these great devotees are, where they're not subject to these imperfections. Like so many times we hear about the foibles of Indra. We hear about the difficulties of even Lord Shiva controlling his anger. You know, we hear about Lord Brahma running after his own daughter out of lust. We hear about all these different things. And then we also hear about the exalted nature of these pure devotees and how they're not influenced by these lower qualities. It's very important. And it's interesting. It's Prahlad Maharaj, he was actually almost shoved forward. Other demigods were so fearful of Lord Nrsimhadev that they actually just pushed him forward and said, here, you go and talk to him. Even Lakshmi Devi herself, who personally massages the lotus feet of Vishnu, even she was too fearful to approach him. So yes, thank you. Very nice point. think that's it. Grantar Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.